It was very near the end of our journey. On one of the very last monasteries perched high up on a particular rock. And I remember it was interesting for me. I had taken one of my wooden Native American flutes into Tibet with me, fully expecting that I would give it to someone before I left and that I would know who that person would be. And it was interesting as we had the opportunity to interact with the abbots and the monks and the nuns. As much as I believe they would have appreciated the flute, I didn't get the sense any of them would ever really use it, that it would be that meaningful to them. And as we were nearing the end of our journey, I carried this flute in my backpack and I shared with my wife. I said, I wonder what I'm going to do with this flute. Is it going to go back to the States with me? And it was in one of our last monasteries where we had an experience that transcended all of those doubts, where we met with one particular man, the abbot of this monastery. And it was with this abbot, through the translators, that I asked the questions that I had asked again and again and again. And this is one of the keys, I believe, looking back, this is probably the reason I even went into Tibet. I asked this man, when we see your prayers, when we watch you chant and tone, and we see your ohms, and you hold your mudras and your mantras, and the bells and the bowls and the gongs and the incense for 12 and 18 hours a day, in those cold monasteries, when we see that happening on the outside, what happens to you on the inside? And he kind of chuckled. He wasn't laughing at us, he chuckled at the question. And through the translator, he began to share something with us that is key in the Isaiah effect. What he said is this. He said, you have never seen our prayers. He said, a prayer cannot be seen. A prayer has no outward expression. What you have seen is what we do in our culture to create the feeling in our bodies. And the feeling is the prayer. The feeling has no outward expression. We can be having a feeling when we walk down the mountain, when we sing our songs, when we eat together in our communal dining rooms. We can be in prayer because the prayer is a feeling. Then he turned the question on me, and he said, in your culture, what do you do to create the feeling in your bodies? And what I realized was that when we lost those texts 1,700 years ago, in large part, we began to lose the information, the relationship that says to us that prayer is a feeling. And we began to believe that the prayer is in the words. If we say the right words the right number of times, the right time of day, that something somehow is going to happen in our world. Now, I'm not saying that's incorrect, and I'm not saying that that's wrong, and what I am saying that that understanding may be incomplete. Because if prayer is in fact based in feeling, or if there is a modality of prayer based in feeling, we have not been conditioned to know that mode of prayer in our traditions in the West. We left the abbot of this monastery and went down into the lower portions where many young monks were in their chanting hall. These were the youngest monks that we had seen. Many of them were maybe 8, 9 years old. Some of them were teenagers. And they were so honored that we had come to see them. They invited us in. We sat among them. They shared their prayers. We shared our prayers. I played my flute. And there was one monk that was fascinated. And I gave him this flute as a gift. And the grin on his face for me was worth the entire journey and the 22 days it had taken to get into this location. He was so touched, and he was actually very good. He picked this flute up and began playing it very quickly. This experience and the camaraderie, the friendships, I believe opened the door for what I'll share next. I asked these monks, do you have a library of many ancient texts that have been with you for a long time, your lineage of wisdom, where do you keep that information? And they said, certainly, we have one. And I said, would you be willing to share that with us, to show it to us? And they were overjoyed to share this very ancient library with us. We were led from their chanting hall through a series of corridors that were flanked on either side by 30-foot tall statues of the Buddha of compassion. If you can imagine this darkened corridor that was illuminated only through yak butter candles as we went down the slippery waxed floor from all of the yak butter that spilled over 600 years of people carrying these lamps down the corridors. And we arrived at a chamber where a very young monk was singing the songs and chanting the prayers to protect their texts so that they would always be there. And it was beyond that room they led us into their library of some of the oldest and most mystical texts that we were able to find, that I've seen to date. Through our translator, I asked the monk, I said, "What's in these books?" And he turned at me and he smiled and he said, "Everything." And I said, "What do you mean, everything? How can you have everything in these books?" He says, "Every mystical tradition, every spiritual belief system that has ever come to our monastery is recorded in here. And many of them we still use today." We began to open the books, and sure enough, what we find in these texts are the equivalent, in some cases, the precise words. This is what really triggered the memories for me. The words were almost the same words that the Essenes used in the Dead Sea Scrolls, that say that feeling is the prayer, feeling is the language that touches nature. It's the language that transcends the perceived boundaries between us and one another, that our feeling world actually touches the cosmos, the heavens, and beyond. It's through our feelings that the angels of the heavens speak to us, and that we in turn speak back to the angels of the heavens, and much, much more. Well, for me, that moment also was worth this entire journey into Tibet, because once again, we had seen validated through very ancient traditions the power of this inner technology. And we had gone even one step further, because rather than speculating about what might be said in an old text, we were able to actually speak to the people who were carrying out these practices today. And in the language of their time, they reaffirmed again and again that feeling is the prayer. All else, all their outward expressions, are how we get to that feeling, whether we're aware of it or not.